of Germany and Europe around the around the topics of anti-racism and migration. The first ultra-red project that I encountered was actually one where we didn't collaborate, but we have been the objects of an ultra-red project. The last one is one that takes us to Serbia in the one of the former Yugoslavian states, and this is one where we did actually a collaboration. The first one was when Leonardo and Don came over to Germany, and they wanted to get in contact with people who were doing migrant self-organizing and working on issues of immigrant rights. So this is how we got to know each other. And one of the sentences that always keeps in my mind was what Leonardo said at some point. He said, "We come from your future." I will come back to this sentence at the end of my talk. So who am I? What are we? We met because I was part of a group, and I still am, that is called Kanakatak. And Kanaka is an abusive word for foreigners in Germany. And we founded this group, a national-wide group with a couple of chapters in throughout Germany in 1997. And this was the political situation where, just to give you a couple of numbers, is that between 1993 and 2004, 80 people died because of racist attacks. 3,400 people were harassed or abused or attacked by race through somehow state or other forms of racist attacks. In this situation, at the end of the 90s, we faced a situation where the left, who was in support of migrant groups, refugee groups, was more or less defeated. The whole power that the left put in was to try to avoid that the asylum law would be abolished, and this was no action with success. In 1993, the asylum law was more or less abolished. There's more or less no possibility at the moment to get legally. They changed this last year, but until 2005, there was no legal possibility to get into Germany. And 1993 was basically the last law that provided at least some kind of access, some kind of legal access to immigrate into Germany, and that was the asylum law, and it was abolished. And while the left still tried to try and get this law back into action, it was very clear that that this wouldn't work, and there was a lot of depression around this subject. At the same time, there was a kind of not too strong, but quite marginalized migrant self-organization, which was in a fight with this left, who would paternalize us, who would try to always criticize us for counter-identifying, for being anti-German. This situation was something that was absolutely not fruitful and productive. And in this situation, we founded this group, and one of our main interests and points was to say we are mainly a group of migrant people from migrant background, but there will also be Germans. And we wrote a manifesto which started with the words, Kanakatak doesn't ask about your heritage or passport. It puts questions about your heritage or passport it attacks questions about your heritage and passport, which meant that also we had and we still have German people in our group, and this is more about what we are going to fight commonly, but we do focus and we have this idea that it has to be mainly migrant people. One of the first things that we did was that we found that there was actually no history, no knowledge about the history of resistance of migrants in Germany. This is an important issue if you understand that during the 90s, we had the first debates on racism, actually. The term racism was not used in Germany, and it's still more or less not used for social relations. And we knew about the situations in the US and the civil rights movement. We knew about the legacies of anti-racist struggles in the UK or in France. And this were also the theories and the books and the people that we related to. And just to give you an example, there was also one group of people, self-organized migrants, during the 90s who called, whose parents would come from Spain or Turkey, from Italy or Yugoslavia, and who would call themselves black. And instead of criticizing them for doing so, because you would on the first sight say these people are white, I think it makes much more sense to understand why they would call themselves black. They called themselves black because they were relating to a certain history and legacy of struggles. And this is how they made sense and tried to make sense of what was actually going on with them, to make sense of and understand what was happening in those situations where so many people died in fire, or where there were pogroms going on in this country, and where people were really afraid of dying or being harassed or attacked. So, of course, this idea about being black and white still continued to be the idea of how racism works, but in the context of Germany, it was different. And it was different because the history of Germany is very important to understand that there is a history of colonialism, but not to the same extent like it is in the UK or France or Spain. But there is the history of National Socialism and anti-Semitism, and migration mainly, at least from 1955 on, took place mainly through the recruitment of workforce from South Europe. And this is where racism concentrated. It was what was called then, in a couple of theories that you might be familiar with, and what we related to was neo-racism. But what we did was we thought we need to know and we need to understand this special historical conjuncture of racism that takes place in Germany. We need to understand this by putting something first that we thought was always coming first, and this was the struggles. And it meant that we wanted to understand the history of racism that was unwritten to this point. We wanted to understand this history of racism by the struggles against it, and not the other way around. We didn't want to write and understand our history as a history of repression, as a history of migrant people always having been repressed. So, we committed ourselves to the modest aim of eliminating racism from German society. And
almost there,
yeah. And a couple of people came together. We were writers, scholars, journalists, theater producers, dancers, graphic artists, IT technicians, students, social workers, teachers. And we had one aim, and this was to write and rework into this history that was threatened by oblivion. When I was to sum up the first years of our engagement, I would say that it was our idea to change the perception of what was migrant culture and migrant politics. And we would use universities, galleries, social centers, demonstrations, newspapers, short novels, theater plays, music tracks, performances, documentaries, DJing, journals, conferences, radio shows, and actions aside to present our perspective. So as you can see, without conceiving myself as an artist, what we've done could be highly related to art. And it was our idea to write this history and investigate into this history, not by writing a book or writing newspaper articles that would not be accessible, but what we have done, and finally we also got the resources to do so, we did a performance which took an hour, and we told this story. What are the struggles of migration in Germany? I think you can divide them into three basic fields. The first one would be that, and this is very important, and a point to which I will come back at the end, that immigration as such can be conceived as a social movement. And as the biggest social movement that we encounter nowadays. That is, for example, the perception of how migration worked in Germany was, and generally still is, that in 1955 there was the first recruitment contract between Italy and Germany, and that this was the beginning of migrants coming to Germany. But if you start to investigate into the history, you can see that this is wrong. That actually those recruitment contracts were attempts to control the movements of migrations that were already going on. So what we did, and I was talking about the abolishment of the asylum law at the beginning of my talk, what we did was to show how movements of migration had certain conjunctures, tried to organize themselves to actually enter the country and try to organize themselves to stay in the country. You can show this in cycles of struggles. And that is, if you see that there are movements of migration from since the Second World War, the attempts to control them was, the first attempts was by these recruitment contracts, which happened between 55 and 68 with different countries. In 73, it was pretty clear, and 73 was the time where the labor struggles that were initiated by migrants were on their peak. In 73, Germany and a lot of other European countries, just to mention this, put a stop to recruitment. From that point on, in 73, there was no legal possibility, actually, to enter the country. Only the possibility was family reunification and undocumented immigration. The only other thing that was left was the asylum law. And you can see that during the 70s, that means in 73, where there was the stop to the recruitment contract and there was no possibility to enter the country, to until 81, 1 million more foreigners would live in Germany. That means, although there was this stop to the recruitment contract, people were actually able to enter the country. And you can then observe from the beginning of the 80s on until the 90s that there was a rise in people trying to get into the country by using the asylum law. And since 93, the number of people coming into the country by asylum has absolutely decreased. This is not because the world became a better place and people don't apply for asylum anymore, but because they have to find different ways to enter the country. And they always do. So in 2000, there was a change in the government. You have to imagine that Germany officially until 2000, despite of 8 million foreigners officially, or 7 million foreigners officially, and estimated 1 million more undocumented foreigners live in Germany, Germany would say that it is not a country of immigration. In 2000, there was a change in government, and slowly people started to talk about that Germany might be a country of immigration, and that maybe somehow this movement into the country cannot be stopped, which is why, and this is, I think, a politics that you can at least observe in Europe, everywhere in Europe, which is the policy at the moment, is that if we cannot stop it, we have to regulate it. And we have to start choosing who's coming into our country. That means we are going to try and integrate those who are here. We are going to close the borders, but only to a certain extent, by building hierarchies and categories to say which group of immigrants we want. And we are going to give them points. For example, the British government now decided on a new plan. They haven't decided, it's not through as a law, but they want to have five of these group of immigrants, of which the first group, for example, can only enter the country alone, without family, without possibility of reunification, without possibility to stay longer than 2 years, and what is really interesting, for example, they will only get a certain amount of their wage monthly, and the rest of the wage they have to access in their country of heritage. That means they have to go back if they want to get to their wage, and they are only there to work. And then you have, you know, these five groups, it's a hierarchy of groups, and the fifth group is the only group that might be able to stay, bring in their family and all of this. And this is, I think, a way where immigration policies goes at the moment. So, to make a jump, at this point, we had to show there was a certain legacy, a certain anti-racist struggle that went on in Germany, and this was that the first thing was that immigration can be organized through networks and that immigration as such is a social movement. The second one, and I was referring to this, I will name it very briefly, you will be familiar with this, is that there was to a large extent labor struggles that were initiated by migrants. What is really interesting about them in relation to the left in the 60s and 70s, who thought of labor struggles being the main point of organizing towards a revolutionary movement, what was really interesting is that actually these migrant labor struggles brought in completely new subjects. That means they were talking about their everyday lives, about their lives outside the factory, because it was constitutive for their work in the factories. And the third thing that was crucial and that was also brought into the struggles in Germany by migrants was the struggles around reproduction, that is, all the questions around health, access to health, about housing, about education. So I think these are the three main fields to be divided and what struggles of migrations are about. I am talking about struggles of migration and not so much about struggles of migrants. And I think this is a very important thing if we want to understand this concept that migration as such is a social movement. And actually the term that we have been using and that is in the discussion at the moment is a lot of people within the movements talk about the autonomy of migration. This term of autonomy does not mean that you have a lot of single migrants who decide that they are going to organize themselves to cross the border, that they are intentionally in struggle with the nation state, but that as a result of a lot of movements, as a result of all these actions, you have a critique to this certain form of social organizing of a nation state, of building up borders. I was yesterday at a teach-in about the student, high school student protest against immigration law, and there was this one slogan that they used, and you will probably be familiar with it, and I heard it for the first time, and that was, we didn't cross the border crossed us. And I think this is a very good point of saying what actually is happening. To a lot of migrant people, if you do actually do interviews with them, the border doesn't mean anything. It's just a post on them. And I think that what is happening at the moment is that the function of a border is completely changing to what it was before. And now I'm coming to the second point and the second collaboration that we did with UltraRed, and that was a project that we have been doing in Serbia. And it was part of a larger project that was actually a collaborative project between artists and researchers and organizers and activists who, and it was called a transit migration. And what we wanted to do was to find out about the borders of Europe. And because there was a lot of work done already on the German and Polish border, on the Mediterranean border, and there was not much work done on the southeast border, that is Yugoslavia, Greece, and Turkey, we wanted to investigate into this. And taking our idea of the autonomy of migration, we wanted to look at how this migration, European migration regime is changing by investigating into the movements of migration, by talking to migrants and how they organize their lives and how they organize their migration. So we were divided in three groups, one of them in Turkey, Greece, and the former Yugoslavian state. And apparently I was contacting Don from UltraRed and asking him if he would be at all interested in such a collaborative project. What we have learned from a couple of things that we have learned throughout our investigation was that the borders of Europe have a completely different function than used to be with the borders of nation states. That is that Yugoslavia, as you might not know, is not part of the European Union, and Turkey is also not. But what we found out was that the European borders cast their shadow far beyond their actual territory. That means that you have the EU having a large and big impact on how migration policies are being implemented and organized in those areas. That means that the European border is not between Greece and Turkey, but between Turkey and Syria. It is not between Slovenia and Croatia, but between the Ukraine and Russia. And it is not between Spain and Morocco, but between Morocco and the Maghreb states and the sub-Saharan Africa. And this is being organized through a couple of contracts with these countries. And you can see how much, you can see already how Europe is becoming larger. At the same time, the border is within all these countries, not only within the Yugoslavia or Turkey, but also within Europe. That means that through the change of police laws, for example, everyone can be investigated or rated at airports, at freeways, at train stations. So the border is also within Europe. It becomes a completely new function, or it gets it. So what we have been doing was, after a couple of attempts to investigate into migrants who were transiting the country, we found out that there was a large Chinese community in Belgrade, and most of those people were running shops in a shopping mall called Block 70. And this is actually the site where we have been doing our militant sound investigation and where we encountered three groups of people. The first one to be women, mainly from Serbia, or refugees from the war, who came to Belgrade to work there. The second one was a group of young boys that we met by chance because they were talking in German to each other. And what we found out was that those boys were kids who were deported from Germany back to Serbia, and who most of them spent their whole entire lives in Germany, came there with 2, 3, 4 years old when they were war refugees, and whose residence permission was canceled, and they could not renew it, and they found themselves, after having to stop their education, their schools, they found themselves back in Serbia, where some of them don't even speak the language. And they work now in this shopping mall, and they work for those Chinese immigrants. And the third group, of course, is those Chinese immigrants who themselves have not a residence permission which is settled, but they have to renew their permission every 3 to 6 months. So the interesting point is that these three groups that we met in this shopping mall all live under economic and, in terms of their citizenship, completely precarious situation. But what at the same time was the interesting point is that all these people did not communicate to each other because they were not able to. Some of them speaking German, some of them don't speaking Serbian but Chinese, and the third group speaking Serbian but not German and Chinese. So there, by investigating into exactly this little site, we found out that there was a group, a fourth group actually, of young women who would earn their money by translating. They were actually the curators of the communication in this block, who were able to talk to all these people, and who were mainly young women who were studying Chinese and who would do the translation work. And we did a couple of interviews, and one of the interviews was with one of the traders of one of the shops in this block. And we talked with him about why these Chinese people were coming to Belgrade, and they were explaining to us that that for them it was a very useful place to be for selling their goods, because as you might know, Serbia is a quite poor country run down through the war, and the Chinese goods are quite cheap. So people who go to this Block 70 don't have to think so much when they spend money in relation to other parts of the city. And so he kept on explaining to us how they came to Serbia, and then we asked him about his status, his citizenship, and addressed him as a migrant. And at this point he said to us, "I am not a migrant. A migrant is someone who at least has some rights." And this is where I come back to the beginning of my talk, where I said, when Leonardo came to us and said, "We come from your future," I think that with this person, we found someone who said to us, "I come from your future." And why do I say this? I say this because I think that this tendency of disenfranchisement is something that is becoming a constant constitution of our lives. And instead of complaining about it, I think we should think of practices of citizenship. We should think of ways of living citizenship that don't have to be guaranteed for us by states or other forms of institution. And I think this is one of the main challenges that we have to face instead of always complaining about disenfranchisement, instead of complaining about how people are not guaranteed right, we have to see, just as we look at migration as something that is a struggle in itself, we have to look at those practices of citizenship that people are not guaranteeing to us, but that we practice and in the way that migration changed already what a nation state is by putting into questions their borders and the constitution of citizenship. At the same time, the practices of citizenship will change the idea of what citizenship can be in the future to come. Thank
you. We're taping today? And then we're going to have it online. So for this reason, we would like to record questions.
Okay. So I just thought about that law that even if you are born in Germany, you are not automatically a citizen, right? I mean, here, if you're born in the country, you become a citizen.
Hello?
Yeah.
But I can't take it off, right? Can I? Well, it works. This is a question. Can I repeat it? You are asking me how
you didn't talk anything about that. I thought if I didn't miss it, and I asked.
No, I can, but I can explain. Yeah. There was a change actually in this. Until 2001, if you were born in Germany, you were not, and you came from a migrant background. Your parents were not German. You were not German either. Now, when you are people who are born from 2001 on. Will get both citizenship, and then between 18 and 21, they have to decide which one they are going to choose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's because that was a major thing before, that you actually could live in generation in the country and you would never become German after. Yeah. But it didn't go retroactive, so people that have been born there like fourth generation or something, when they changed the law, they were still not German or so?
No, they were still not. They were still not German, but you can of course apply for German citizenship, which at the moment is a big issue and very interesting issue, because they are now inventing questionnaires for people who want to become German citizen, and they ask them very interesting things. For example, because they have this problem about they don't want terrorists to become German citizen. They have this very tricky question where they say, if you take the attacks on September 11, do you think these people were freedom fighters or terrorists? Very difficult to answer.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I saw when it was changing here, when you fill out the immigration paper here, first 10 years ago or something, it was they asked, have you ever been a part of the Communist Party and all that? And then it changed to the question, have you ever been a terrorist? It's like, and you have to put yes or no, yeah. So, but and have you ever been a prostitute, they ask also if you want to enter this country.
No, the interesting thing about this questionnaires is actually that they appropriate in a way, also anti-racist and certain legacies of the left. For example, they would also ask you, if you would mind your children to be gay, and this is a very interesting question because it also threatens the German population, because this is now the debate going on, that a lot of people would actually, some of them wouldn't be even able to answer all these questions. They are also about German history and all of this. I wouldn't be able to answer these questions. And some of these questions are actually about what your political ideas about sexuality, about politics, and all of this are. And it presupposes that the German state is very clear about this, but they are not.